I have been Representative Finkelstein. And Representative Taylor. We're going to have before us today House Bill 78, the Family Protection Act. Before we bring that up, we had a carryover bill from last week. My understanding was that there was a discussions during the interim from last week, and that some agreements were reached. Is Representative Boyer here?
Yes, sir.
Could you join us at the table? I didn't want to belabor this issue much because we're short on time, and I wanted to be able to get out of here in time for our senator's march today. But if you could just real briefly run through the points.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the meeting that we had, I think it was on Thursday afternoon, we did provide or did come up with a committee substitute. It should be work draft number 7LS0168M 2891. I think that is available to your members. We've made a couple of drafts available. That's the most recent draft. And what it did was address the three areas of concern that the board had and the Society of Public Accountants, the Certified Public Accountants, as well as the Alaska Society of Independent Accountants had with the bill. And the bottom line is the one issue that dealt with the designated seats has been resolved to the satisfaction generally of the parties involved by not designating a seat, but rather reinforcing the an Attorney General opinion, which in effect said that public members could be non-certified public accountants. That language, while not totally satisfactory for all parties, was a compromise approach that was accepted by all folks. And that new language is on page 2, section 2B, line 16 of the proposed committee substitute. The other major stumbling block had to do with the issue of compilation, as you might recall. And we also were able to reach some consensus by rephrasing the report language that dealt with compilation, and that language has been, again, as much as compromise language can never be totally agreed upon by the affected parties. I will say, however, that the Alaska Society of Certified Public Accountants, or the Society of Certified Public Accountants, has not formalized their support of the bill yet. Their own internal organization has yet to churn out a formalized recommendation, but from people who've been working with this piece of legislation, all indications are that they will support this bill as it moves through the process. And verbally, the board has supports the concept embodied in the proposed CS as well as the independent accountants. And here to speak perhaps for the board, as I shouldn't speak for the board, is Deborah Marshall, who is a current public member on that board, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions before
we get to Deborah, Representative Donner, Representative Taylor.
For purposes of discussion, I'd like to move the adoption of the proposed CS.
Okay, so is there objection to moving the substitute before us? Okay, hearing no objection, this has been adopted. Representative Taylor?
Oh, I was just going to do the same thing.
Okay, great. Deborah? Oh, I'll do that. Yeah.
My name is Deborah Marshall, and I've been serving on the Public Board of Accountancy for 3 years as a public member, and what I have to say is to urge today the passing of HB 13. I think it's in the public interest to pass this bill. The meat of the bill, notwithstanding the areas that we had to come to consensus on, is about education. In my 3 years on the board, we have been asked on an annual basis to accept a lot of CPAs from out of state and even out of the country because Alaska State's educational requirements for CPA licensure are significantly less than the rest of the country. And in this bill, we bring ourselves up to standards by exacting a stiffer educational requirement for our CPAs, also stiffer exam requirements, which will help our CPAs with reciprocity in other states if they choose to go practice elsewhere. If we pass this bill, they will be in better standing to do that. I feel like this bill really is in the public interest because it will ensure better quality CPA services in the state of Alaska. I'd like to see it passed.
Great. Thank you, Deborah. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, do you, Deborah, feel that there will be no bill introduced then by the governor on behalf of the board and the CPAs?
That there will be no what?
No bill introduced by the governor's office.
After this?
I have a letter here that says your group and certified public accountants have a bill that they're proposing to the governor's office. I wonder if that was going to just go way was to take care of all those concerns?
I believe so.
Yes,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that's the, at this point, there would be no need for a separate bill. This embodies and is supported by, embodies the interest of the State Board of Accountancy and is now supported by the State Board, as I understand it.
That is correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything else before the committee on this?
Committee with individual recommendations.
It's been so moved by Representative Taylor. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Deputy.
We've got next before us the Family Protection Act, and if Kay, if you could join us to generally describe the bill. We've only got one person on teleconference, and I think people here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Happy to be discussing this bill with you today. It's a bill that I've been working on. It was the first bill that I got passed 4 years ago when I was first elected to the legislature. It's changed somewhat, but the concept is generally the same. What we're talking about is providing unpaid leave for childbirth, adoption, and family illness, either of yourself or of a family member, child, parent, spouse, with reemployment rights. I think it's certainly appropriate that we very carefully consider how imposing a standard like this on business will affect business, but I believe that family leave ought to be considered a minimum labor standard and a basic employment right that we need to guarantee for all workers. Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, this bill provides that a worker could take a maximum of 18 weeks within a 12-month period for pregnancy, childbirth, or adoption, and an 18 weeks within a 24-month period for a serious health condition of self, child, spouse, or parent, or any combination. Mr. Chairman, I think the justification for this goes to the very social fabric of our country and our state. As we look at the problems we have, crime, drug abuse, dysfunctional families, what can be done long-term to get to the root of some of those problems? And I think that this is one thing that we can do that will, in fact, help children get a good start in life and will help families be able to function and help workers be able to meet what we all know are increasing stresses on them from trying to balance family responsibilities with the workplace. Women are some of the people who are most affected by this bill. Women are the people who often have the task of providing the care for newborn children as well as for sick family members. We know that many, many families are headed by single working mothers, and it's very important that they have the opportunity to return to their job and not be put in a position of having to leave their job in order to meet these responsibilities. And further, we know that for infants younger than 3 months, it's virtually impossible to find care outside the home. And so these are some of the reasons that I feel that it's important that we address this topic. We also have a growing number of seniors and people who need care. And to the extent we're able to assist families in taking care of those needs, we will lower the overall cost to the state and to society as a whole by encouraging families to meet these needs. Generally, one of the major objections to this proposal has been that it is too expensive and it will hurt small business, put small businesses out of business. Mr. Chairman, I do not believe that there's evidence that indicates conclusively that there is, in fact, a cost to business. There are competing costs, and you have to look at the trade-offs among them. In the first place, if people truly are sick and have to miss work, that's going to be the case whether this leave is there or not. And there is a very high cost to business associated with having to replace people and start over again. And in the states that have this, and also some of the work that's been done by the Congress and their staffs and the GAO as they've debated this policy at the national level, indicates that how businesses cope with leave of this type is in the same way that they cope with vacations and other leave that have to be taken. They shuffle responsibilities around, sometimes hire temporary employees to come on and pick up the slack. But in any event, we are not imposing a cost. This is not paid leave, it is unpaid leave. And while inconvenience and having to work through filling in for an employee who is temporarily not there could cause perhaps loss of opportunity, particularly in a small business, I think overall that the benefits at least make it a wash in terms of the cost. One of the other benefits I believe that we would see from a policy like this is improved morale, as people are able to be more focused on the responsibilities that they have in their jobs, knowing that it's not a direct competition with their family responsibilities. Many countries in the world, in fact all industrial countries except the United States, have some type of guaranteed job related or leave and job security. A number of states, 13 plus DC, have enacted some variation of this bill since 1987, and a number of other states are considering it. Alaska, I believe, needs a family leave policy. We have a very young population. We have a growing number of seniors. We have high costs of welfare and public assistance, and we have a large number of marriages that are ending in divorce and leaving us with single-parent families where this type of flexibility is very much needed. Mr. Chairman, this is not an unusual type of benefit to be providing. There was an article recently in the paper that described the federal mandates for reservists. When reservists have to be called up to go serve in the armed forces, they receive benefits very similar to this, so that when their service is done, they're able to return to their jobs. And that's a cost on business, but I think we all feel that it's an appropriate one for society as a whole to guarantee that those people will have a job to return to. Mr. Chairman, as this bill has moved in past years, and since I've introduced it this year, I've received comments from a number of people, including some members of the legislature, who said that they've been hearing from their constituents that this bill is objectionable to businesses, particularly small businesses. And although I personally feel that a policy like this is appropriate for all workers, I think being pragmatic about it, I would recommend to the committee that we remove private employers from this bill. I think it's important to move forward with something that is achievable, and I think establishing this policy for the public sector is very appropriate and would give us some experience with it so that we can see how it works and see what the impacts are, and we can encourage voluntary compliance in the private sector at this time. And hopefully, as it is played out in the public sector, private employers will recognize the benefits of it and will voluntarily adopt it. I've been working on a proposed committee substitute, which I'll ask Rosemary Karish to pass out, that does remove the private sector. It also makes some other small changes in response to comments that have been made to me since this bill has been introduced. I'll just highlight four of the things that are the major things that are different in this committee substitute. The main one is that it removes the private sector and would make this only applicable to state employees, employees of subdivisions of the state or the municipalities, and the school districts. It also adds in the Alaska Railroad, which I always assumed were covered under the broad language, but I've been informed that's not the case, so it explicitly adds them in. It tightens the definition of healthcare provider. The language in the original bill could have included some kind of marginal, I guess, that's not a good word, would have included far more than just physicians, and so there's a, we asked the drafter to suggest a tighter definition for when you're getting your serious medical condition certified, who would be eligible to do that. And it also addresses a concern brought up by NEA about the wording of when a collective bargaining agreement would come into play with respect to this law. I am informed by the Commissioner of Labor that if private businesses are removed from the bill, there would be a zero fiscal note from that department, As the bill is now structured, we provide a conciliation is the mechanism for achieving, resolving disputes or complaints. Commissioner Usera told me she felt that this could be incorporated into the existing work if it was only to apply to the public sector. And so that is another consideration in this time when we are trying very hard to keep the budget down. And in that event, there would be no identified fiscal impact to the state as a result of this legislation. I would briefly like to address some of the remarks that the Mr. Otto, the Director of Personnel, made in his analysis of the bill. And I believe you have that in your packet under the fiscal notes. He says that sick leave usage could be expected to increase because it would be available under a new set of circumstances. He states as a general result that, I mean, as a general matter, that this legislation would result in costs throughout state government, but they can't be quantified accurately. Mr. Chairman, the studies that I've seen and some of the work done by the NCSL and others on the federal legislation shows that employees don't use all the sick leave that's paid sick leave, that they are generally guaranteed, and I guess there's reasons for that. People like to bank it or save it and maybe take it in a lump sum later, but I really question whether additional sick leave is going to be taken frivolously if it is not needed, since what we're talking about here is unpaid leave, and most employees don't fully utilize their paid sick leave. He goes on to say that training costs would increase because here we're talking about having substitutes required to fill in for the employees. I just wanted to point out that there's a trade-off there between the cost you would incur from training a substitute versus the large cost you incur when you have to totally start over with a brand new worker. Studies indicate that more than 90% of the first year's salary for a new worker is taken up just in training and getting that person oriented and fully productive on the job. So there is a high cost to employee turnover. Keeping long-term good employees and giving them the flexibility to be gone a short time and return to the workplace is not clear to me that it, in fact, would increase those costs. He says substitute employees could not be expected to produce at the same level as permanent employees. I agree with that. They couldn't be, but I think we'd have also the advantage of cross-training your staff and having more depth in the workforce. And again, if people are truly sick or truly having a child, they're going to be there. They're going to be gone from the workplace anyway, whether or not we have this bill. He says here that lowered morale could be a result. I don't agree with that. I think the more likely result is that we would have improved morale from establishing a policy like this. And there's certainly a lot more that's been written and could be said about this, but in the interest of brevity, I'll end my remarks there, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions from members of the committee?
Okay. I certainly understand the perception that may exist out there of the necessity for providing this security, but I remember the arguments sometimes along the same subject, and I don't remember right now. There may have been some presented to us, but are there in fact cases where people, due to either illness or childbirth or whatever, have asked for an extended period of time off, been denied it, and then been unable to get their job back? Are there actual incidents that have occurred, or is this just a perception?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, yes, there are a number of instances that have been identified and are in the record over the last 4 years. Several that come to mind immediately in the case of state employees relate to adoption, where people have sought to take time off to be with an adopted new child. Our state law now provides 9 weeks for childbirth only for female employees only. And this bill would be a family bill. It would apply to men as well as women. Of course, it would provide a longer period of time. But I know of several who have been denied that. And as a result, those employees have quit. and I don't know about seeking reemployment. In this climate, reemployment is difficult because of the difficulty. You got to get back on the register. Many jobs are not being filled because we're managing our way down with attrition and so on. So I think there's a real loss to the worker there and also to the state from losing that person. There are a number of instances in the record. I just mentioned that as one example. Many have been brought forward and discussed.
The only reason I ask is that in my experience in the private sector, when you have a highly skilled... My experience in the private sector is that when you have a highly skilled or valued and well-trained employee who's been with you for a while, they need some extended period of time off that the employer will frequently make an extraordinary effort to see to it that that individual is accommodated because you want that person back. It doesn't matter whether that person that needs to go out for alcohol abuse, and so he's going to be gone for 6 weeks, or she, or whether it's for a child. But I am concerned about the demographics. And the recent survey or seminar, I should say, we attended in Seattle, some several of us, one of the little books did a study on the economics of Alaska and BC, British Columbia. From 1978 to 88, in British Columbia, the average take-home pay was $11,578. In 88, it was $16,500. They'd gone up by 50%. In Alaska, it was $17,100 in 1978. Today, it's 1988, it was $16,700. Our average had gone down by $400. And that compared to what I had seen in my area, at least, in that we don't have very many people out there that aren't holding down the typical family. Both husband and wife are working. I remember last year, the speaker at my house had a child. He could not take off time off for bonding with the child, or chose not to. And I don't know of many people who can afford to leave their job. 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. Repossess the house at the end of that time. In other words, we may have this opportunity available, but as a practical, real-world situation, will people even be able to avail themselves of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor. I agree that there are many times when private employers try to accommodate the legitimate needs that workers have as well they should, and we hope they do. I think your understanding of a typical family may not be accurate any longer. The studies I've read show that now less than 10% of families fall into what we typically think of as a traditional family. And certainly there's no question that the makeup is changing. We're seeing all kinds of different situations out there, and many situations where you have a single parent. Now, in the case of a woman who is in the service or retail trade where you have a high percentage of women workers and pretty low-paying work, if that person feels the necessity to be away, either because of sickness or childbirth, and does not have the opportunity to return to a job, that person is more likely, I believe, in the work and that's been done on this indicates, to end up in the social welfare system, to end up on public assistance, and I think it is in all of our benefit to make it possible for that person to be temporarily out and to return to work, to have a job to return to. My understanding is that family leave is provided least often for the people who are at the bottom end of the scale and who need the flexibility. That's really the people that I think are going to be most affected by a policy of this type. People who need the assistance. And sure, there are questions. Can people afford it? Not everyone will be able to afford it, but some people will, and the ability to go back and begin working again after a short period of time is very important.
I'd like to get on to the public testimony. Representative Brown, if you could join us at the table. We've got over 20 people signed up to testify so far, so I'd like to limit each person's statement to 3 minutes. We have a speech coming at 2:30. We all have to leave for by Senator Mikowski, so I have no choice but to adjourn prior to 2:30. Oh, good. Well, if that's the case, we'll be able to go on longer. First person I'd like to go to is a person in Anchorage who I promised could testify early so they could leave, Jacqueline Brussers. Jacqueline, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes, she's approaching the mic. I had testified last year on a bill similar to this, and I'm delighted to testify again. I'm an attorney and a parent through adoption. Under the current statute, specifically 39.20, I experienced discrimination specifically because I was a parent by adoption. I had leave that would have been available to me but was denied because I was a parent through adoption. I think there's no choice, but we need to change that language now and not wait another year. It discriminates against families who create their families through adoption and marriage and other means, and it also discriminates against fathers. I'd also like to talk about the scope, and I know this isn't going to be very popular, but I think it's fairly appalling that we as a nation and as a state do not have any policy regarding parental leave that protects the family. We are the only industrial country that does not, and it seems very interesting to me that we at this time are holding ourselves up internationally as sort of a moral guard and sending thousands and thousands of troops into the Gulf and spending millions of dollars, and yet we're leaving families bankrupt in our own country. I think the values that we have are really out of balance, as we can see on the whole international scene. Workers should not be treated just as another data chip, and I think as Kay talked to, is that big business is fairly enlightened and informed, as I remember a gentleman testifying from IBM last year. And they seem to know the value of a trained and loyal employee and treat him more than just a commodity and realize that, as Kay testified earlier and I totally agree with, that when you treat a worker as a whole human being and not a one-dimensional entity, you're going to get a lot more in terms of production. And I think it's time, way past time, that the marketplace come to realize that there's other values besides turning a dollar. I think that's part of what's happening internationally is that our values are really off, and this is an opportunity to look at what we want to support as a state. And I can't tell you enough that I think it's absolutely appalling that we don't have anything more enlightened. The other thing I'd like to talk about in terms of the scope, the bill really talks about leave in addition to childbirth, adoption, to serious medical conditions. Most recently, I had to quit my job because I was experiencing a child care crisis. And as some of you may realize, child care in this state and in this country is at a critical level. The demand far exceeds the supply, especially for children under 3 years of age, which I have a 20-month-old. I was, on both occasions, lost my child care provider without any notice and spent enormous amounts of time trying to find a substitute without success. And my employer at that time felt like it was not an issue and that I could park my child anyplace and was actually given an ultimatum to return to work. Under those circumstances, I had no choice but to quit my job and stay home and take care of my child. I think that kind of thinking is really dark ages and has no place at this time in the state and certainly should be extinguished. I hope that you will become enlightened and informed and realize it's past time to have a bill that will protect families and workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. We've got an Anchorage, one of our assembly members, Heather Flynn. Heather, do you want to testify at this time?
Yes, she's approaching the mic.
Is anyone, Heather, are you there in Anchorage? because if you're talking, we can't hear you. For Juno, we should probably have another person come up just to speed things up. We've got a PA McConkie.
That's close enough.
If you could just start to testify, that'd be great. You can say your name for the record.
Peggy Ann McConkie. Honorable members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, I'm here to speak to you today in opposition to House Bill 78, otherwise known as the Alaska Family Protection Act. I have owned and operated a real estate company here in Juneau since 1986, employing 2 paid staff and 11 realtors, not including myself. My husband owns a local RACA club and employs 10 full-time people and 35 part-time employees. We are your typical small business people. We believe that the state government should not force any small business to give employees the type of leave from work as proposed in this bill. Rather, these policies should be left up to the particular employer to establish if it sees fit as it fits their individual businesses. It has been estimated by NFIB that the cost of paying overtime or hiring a temporary replacement, coupled with training costs and lower productivity levels associated with overworked or novice employees, would average $2,500 each time a worker took the maximum amount of leave. Small business cannot afford this type of expense. In Juneau, the major employers are the state and federal government, and probably will always be. Small businesses for years have been forced to compete with them for employees, most notably for the wages offered and the benefits provided. Small businesses throughout the state are finally recovering and stabilizing after the 1985 downturn in the economy. Now is not the time to be promoting legislation to impose additional mandated costs or workplace regulations, which may further impede the ability of small business employers to employ. Honorable members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, we ask you to vote against House Bill 78 and consider Representative Kay Brown's substitution. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Representative Brown, are you recent? Your name again?
Peggy Ann McConkey.
I'm sorry. I was running out of time. I wanted to ask on the employment compensation package, what happens to the person that's hired on a temporary basis as far as the cost is concerned? Can they make a claim for being unemployed?
I have no idea. I'm a small business owner. I only can speak to what our individual businesses take and what we do. In our particular case, I happen to have 2 women employees, obviously, who are pregnant. And currently what I do is I try to work with them to try to work out the timetable that they'll need to be away in order to make sure it does not harm my business, but also guarantees them some type of rights of employment when they return.
Mr. Chairman, I ask because that was one of the points made, not necessarily in yours, but in one of the other packets that I have, small business people, on what they thought would be cost, and I was interested in knowing if you felt that you would have to pay into that, but then they would make a call on the system for being unemployed.
For real estate business, it's a little bit different because we operate on an independent contractor's basis. I do not, quote, have 11 other employees, I have 2 employees.
Is there, if this were written just for government itself, do you feel it would be fair to ask that person be required to come back to work after that period of time, whether it's 12 weeks or 20 weeks? Rather than having it as an option.
I have not gone through Kay Brown's bill, her proposal, so I don't feel prepared to speak to that point, but I personally do not necessarily think that the state should also require that period of time or that job be necessarily held open for that person. I think that the individual circumstances must be considered as to whether or not it's going to hinder that particular department business operation, whether they can continue without that person.
In your line of business, you could probably take that person back just fine because they would be on the commission structure, is that what you have?
Correct, but for my husband's business, no, that would not be fine. The cost of trying to get somebody in there with the skill or expertise that person held in order to be able to operate the business during that period of time would be incredibly costly, not only monetarily, but also for the extra staff time and my husband's time to try to take over that position while they're gone.
Mr. Chairman, I'll pass for now, but thank you. I'd like to I like to generally hold off on questions for now just because I'm worried about getting through all witnesses, but we'll have people here. We can call them back for some of these matters as well. Heather, can you hear us in Anchorage? If you can, please proceed.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, loud and clear.
Thank you. We had a little technical difficulty here. We unplugged something. As I've discussed with many of you in the past, I think most of us, as we've gone through the rigors of establishing child care as a basic benefit both in the public and the private sector, we've come to realize that it's not a motherhood and apple pie issue. It's a bottom-line business issue. Your employees, whether you're public or private, are the best asset you've got. And if you have a revolving door kind of situation where you're always training and retraining new employees to replace those who've gone out the door because of the lack of child care, you're spending a lot of money that you otherwise would not. I think the same points can be made with regard to the bill that is in front of you, but I want to add a slightly different dimension to it. I'd like you to emphasize the fact that it is a dependent care and leave kind of issue as well. As I have written recently, and those of you who know me as I have experienced recently, I believe the national statistic now is that the average woman, and I emphasize woman, spends 17 years of her life raising her children and 18 years of her life dealing with her aging and dying parents. I've had three of the four of mine go into convalescent care in the last year and a half. And so it is with that in mind that I'd like you to recognize when considering this bill that there is a need for us to make room and leave time for the care of our elders as well. For the last couple of years, I have been involved in a national program on health care. The cost of health care and its related costs are escalating so rapidly at more than three times the cost of living. And the net result of that is that employers, both public and private, are looking for every way they can to avoid or even eliminate costs. They're contracting out work, they're reducing hours. In other words, this bill is, in many respects, bucking a national trend. So as part of a large organization who also has to figure out how to pay the bill for this kind of program, should it become law, I'd like to suggest to you a couple of ways in which you could modify the legislation and possibly make it more palatable to both the public and the private sector who would have to pay for it. Just last week, I read a lengthy article in the Wall Street Journal about women who become pregnant and take time off from the job and the negatives that they experience on the job because they do that. And any of us who've ever been on the job and in that situation know that there is a certain amount of resentment. So I would like to suggest that in the bill, you might want to make a couple of modifications. For example, I think being on the job a longer time prior to taking leave, if you would require, for example, 18 to 24 months on the job prior to the benefit becoming available, that might make it easier to handle. Likewise, I would suggest that when you look for people with hours, that you do go to 20 hours and 40 hours instead of the 35 and 17 and a half that you have in the bill. Now, I realize it's sensitive to the fact that state workers may have a shorter than 40-hour work week, but the rationale for that in there is that the vast majority of the people do work a 40-hour work week, and it should be tuned so that it doesn't appear as though it's going to a specific class of workers. I think that's all I want to add at this point, except to go back and suggest once again to you that you be very sensitive to those persons who have to take time off in their lives, deal with aging and dying parents. It is a very real expenditure of time and emotional energy, and for the vast majority of people, there's no tax deductions that go with it either. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. The next person I'd like to go to in Sitka is Kathleen McGraw. And if Ben Compton in the Matsu could get ready after that, that would be good. she could proceed, please.
Thank you. My name is Ruth McKenzie. I'm the laboratory supervisor at the Mount Edgecombe Hospital. And I would just like to give you a positive experience that we had in our laboratory. We had an employee who was pregnant who had worked there approximately 3 years. We were able to give her as much leave as she needed after the pregnancy, after the birth of the child. And then we were able to also give her a flex schedule so that between she and her husband, they did the entire child care and they did not have to go outside for child care. We did this at no extra cost to the laboratory by people pitching in a little bit more and working a little bit harder. It was a very worthwhile experience for all of us, and I would just like to advocate for this bill. I think it's long overdue.
Great. Thank you very much, Ruth. Appreciate your testifying today. Next, we'll go to Ben Compton and the Matsu, and then C.A. Bryan in Anchorage after that.
Hey, this is Ben Compton from Matsu. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Okay, we'll give it a shot here. Seeing that I have 3 minutes, I'll try to cut it short because there's a lot on the scope in dealing with this bill, which I'm very glad that they and the rest of them are sponsoring this bill. And I'd like to see this nationwide. And I'd like to send Kay and the members there an informational packet and hopefully go over that. If you read from the National Women's, I believe, Legal Defense Fund, a report that was given to Congress last year, I think you'll see the scope of the problem in relation to childbirth, adoption, and serious illness. And read some of the tragedies that have happened nationwide, and Alaska is no different. I'd like to deal now with adoption, if I may. I have a family of four and three of whom we adopted from Colombia. My wife and I are both working. We work for the state of Alaska, which is a typical, I think, famous situation where both parents work. And if you read from the state's personnel rules on childbirth and adoption, you'll see where parents that are adopting are definitely discriminated against. By that I mean a mother can take 9 weeks off in relation to a childbirth, and that would be taken from a sick leave, where if you adopted, that would be taken from annual leave, and that would be at more or less your employer's discretion. In relation to three children which we adopted from Colombia, and their ages, which I think are important, are 8, 10, and I believe 15 at the time, I was only granted, I believe, 3 weeks, and my wife, fortunately, was granted 4 weeks. I spent 1 week in Colombia, so I spent actually a total of about 2 weeks with them here stateside. The children did not speak English at all. And they come with, of course, many problems, uncertainties, and so forth. Adoption agencies, like with WACAP there, will tell you that 9 weeks would be a minimum. And that is obvious if you talk with psychologists and schools and so forth. They need that time with their parents to adjust. Recently, I believe the Colombian government now requires 4 weeks for a parent to spend in Colombia just to get accustomed to that. But I'd like you to keep in mind the scope of the problem. Adoption is just one relation to it. But the American family, to me, and I think those that have children, are number one, and the family is the backbone, I believe, of our society. And this type of a bill for Alaska and nationwide would definitely be of a great benefit, not only to our children, but to the American family. And I think the employer would reap the benefit of that as well, because we'd be very grateful of having such a bill as this.
Great. Well, I appreciate your taking the time, Ben, to come testify to us today. The next person we'll go to is C.A. Bryan in Anchorage, and after that, Vicki Borrego here in Juneau.
Thank you very much. I would like to say that initially, since this bill appears to have been changed now to merely affect state and governmental agencies in the state, that is much more palatable to those of us who own. While we're here, since this bill was originally meant to encompass the private enterprise, I would like to make a statement regarding that at this time, that it's totally unpalatable. in my opinion, for the government to legislate employment practices in the private sector, telling private employers who to hire and how to compensate them, and by that I mean an entire compensation package, salary, leave, benefits, insurance, pension, profit sharing, and the like. These are attempts to bring the private sector into alignment with the government employment policies, and I'm afraid that the government isn't known at any level of efficiency, and that these kinds of policies tend to undermine the efficiency that we see and we enjoy in the private enterprise. There have been a lot of comments about America being behind the other industrial nations of this country. I'd like to remind you that most of the other industrial nations of the world are socialists. We are not. We still embrace the capitalistic system of economic enterprise. Thank goodness. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Bryan. Vicki, come forward here, and Gino, we'll go next after this to Rosemary Vandelaine in Anchorage.
My name is Vicki Borrego, and thank you. I represent the Alaska League of Women Voters. The League has made HB 78, the Alaska Family Protection Act, sponsored by Representative Kay Brown and others, one of the top three legislative priorities for 1991. This should give you an indication of how important we feel the passage of HB 78 is. As you probably know, the Alaska League of Women Voters does not take a position on proposed legislation lightly. We're not able to support or reject a public policy issue without having first determined if it fits into our written position statements, then reviewed it by a statewide study group. These study groups are drawn from members in League chapters throughout the state, and we currently have chapters in Anchorage, Central Kenai Peninsula, Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, and the Tanana Valley. The League of Women Voters of Alaska supports the Alaska Family Protection Act because it allows both partners in the working family equality of opportunity and a measure of job security at a time when the family may feel the most at risk due to a serious health problem of their immediate family, birth, or adoption. The League of Women Voters of the United States, with the concurrence of the State League of Women Voters, believes that government has the responsibility to provide equality of opportunity in three critical areas, education, employment, and housing, for all persons in the United States. It is no longer possible for most families to meet financial obligations without both partners working full time. This is especially the case in the state of Alaska, where prices for the bare necessities have never been low. The League is also concerned about the growing number of single-parent families having to shoulder the full financial responsibility for raising children. Representative Brown's bill is important in acknowledging the redefinition that has taken place in American society. Families should receive protection from termination due to the necessities that arise through the natural course of life, including adoption and bearing a child, or having a serious health problem. We urge the committee to adopt HB 78. And we thank you for the opportunity to express the League's position.
Okay, thank you very much, Vicki. Next is Rosemary Vandelaine in Anchorage, and then Eric Yeha in Juneau. Rosemary, are you there in Anchorage?
Hello? Okay. This is Rosemary Vandelaine. I'm here on behalf of the American Association of University Women in Alaska. That's Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Kimbiak. And actually, the previous speaker from the League of Women Voters said more or less the same kind of things that I wanted to say. However, I will just say that we are really sorry that this bill has had to be introduced again. We were hoping that last year this bill would pass. We find that when leave is unpaid, there's really little chance of abuse of the law. And on the contrary to thinking that this will be a hardship to most businesses, we have found that in states and countries where similar legislation has been enacted, statistics actually show that productivity has grown, along with the trust in a government that has shown true concern for families. We feel that this HB 78 is legislation for families, which finally acknowledges the need for the nurturing of all generations, as Kay said, the young, the middle-aged, and the elderly, any of whom may require specialized home care at some time. HB 78 will help frustrated families find a healthier balance between work and family responsibility in times of physical need. We've heard about other industrialized Western countries having more generous policies. so we don't need to dwell on that at all. But our society in the United States depends on the family to provide the physical caretaking and emotional support of all individuals. We do not have a system whereby we can have a socialist help in this way. Without this bill, Alaskan families will continue to remain deprived of adequate ability to cope with work and with physical or emotional distress in times of need. AAUW members appeal to the Alaskan lawmakers not to neglect the family as they have in the past. This is the heart of our society, but please to seriously consider and to adopt HB 78. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we've got Eric here in Juneau. We'll go to Tita Pittman in Anchorage after that.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Eric Biela. I'm an assistant vice president and branch manager for the Juneau branch of First Bank. First Bank employs approximately 100 full-time employees, with the bulk of these being at our main office in Ketchikan. All of our outlying branches, Juneau included, employ 4 to 8 people, predominantly women and many of them of the childbearing age. The current policy of First Bank is to allow an employee 6 weeks of maternity leave, where the employee will return to the same or similar position as held previously. Extensions to this leave have been granted at the request of the employee if management does not consider it an undue hardship on their department, their co-workers, or the customer, which is our ultimate reason for being in business. An entry-level teller position takes a minimum of 2 weeks training just to operate a teller window by themselves. If you need additional sales, computer, and other specialized equipment training, a regular employee needs approximately 60 days to be brought up to a productive speed. I believe it would be very difficult, expensive, and counterproductive to be required to train additional people to replace regular personnel on extended leave. I find it already extremely difficult to compete with state salaries, benefit packages, and work schedules. Turnover is already at 45% bank-wide and is compounded by the fact that small businesses become training grounds for the state. A brief poll was taken at our main office to see if employees would like the mandated leave option. The answer, of course, was yes. When asked if they would use the leave, the answer was no. If I could afford to be off work without pay for 4 months, I'd quit. So much for loyalty. I have a few other questions, but I'll let those go for now. In closing, I'd just like to state that my opinion as a manager and employer, this bill is minimally beneficial to employees, unrealistic in its expectations of employers being able to administer it, and completely ignores the cost effect it will have on the consumer. This bill completely goes against sound business judgment, and this sort of restrictive legislation has no place in a free enterprise system of delivering goods and services at the lowest possible cost to the ultimate consumer. Thank you for your opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Eric. Theta, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Sherman. My name is Theta Pittman. I'm the chair of the Alaska Women's Political Caucus. In the 3 or 4 years that I've heard this legislation debated, a couple of themes keep reoccurring. The opponents always say or always act as though we don't care how they do it anywhere else or how well it works anywhere else, be that another country or any of several states which have successfully adopted this kind of legislation. Secondly, the opponents claim that it will cost too much, and I would urge you to scrutinize that claim very carefully, because I haven't heard anyone who testifies that they're unhappy about the prospective cost explain what cost they mean or provide any way that that claim can be evaluated. I did see in the news the other day that now employers who have reservists who've been called, reservist employees who've been called up to active duty, many of those employers are paying reservists, although they're not required to do so. And in effect, they are voluntarily paying two salaries for people, men and women, who are employed in the defense of our country, the salary for the reservist who's been called to active duty and the salary for the replacement. This legislation does not require that. I think it is fairly incredible that it's getting the kind of opposition it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Zita. Next, we'll have Sherry Gall in Juneau, and then we'll go to Sean O'Hare in Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Gall, and I'm representing the Alaska Women's Lobby today. The Women's Lobby has been on record for a long long time in support of the broadest possible application for a family leave policy, and we support House Bill 78, both in its original version as well as in the proposed committee substitute. We feel that in the best of all worlds, workers would not have to fear losing their job while they're attending to a serious illness of a family member. A new parent should not, either by adoption or by birth, they should be permitted optimally to take enough time away from work to properly bond with that child. We feel that ideally parental leave would, as it is in over 80 other countries, be paid leave and would apply to all workers, protection for all workers. This bill does not provide paid leave. It simply provides the security of knowing that one may return to one's work when one has had a personal emergency or the birth of a child. The latest version of the bill will only apply to public employees. Still, we feel that this will set important public policy, and that policy will be vastly important to families. State and local government is a major employer in this state, and so if the reduced version is adopted by this committee, still many Alaskans, if not all, will be protected and benefit in a positive way by this legislation. We support the gender-free nature of the policy, extending family leave to both men and women, but we recognize that it's especially important to women, because despite their full participation in the workforce, women remain the primary caregivers in their families. Three-quarters of all caregivers for older people are women, primarily women who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. 69% of women between the ages of 45 and 54 are employed, and nearly half of those between 55 and 64. For these working women, the economic consequences can really be devastating if they have to lose their job right at the same time when family illness is driving their expenses up. And midlife women face a further difficulty because they may face age and sex discrimination when they try to find another job after losing their first job. Job loss for family caregiving is one of the reasons why only 12% of all women over 65 have pensions. Younger working parents can also benefit at the time of birth or adoption, and we've heard testimony about how many adoptive parents have felt discriminated even by the policy that covers state employees. The early childhood development experts all agree that the first 4 months of a child's life are incredibly important and crucial to their future development. We don't feel that workers should have to choose between making a living and living a meaningful family life. And we think that House Bill 78 will strengthen Alaskan families. And we hope that the public sector will serve as a model in setting a standard for other employers to follow. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this.
Thank you, Sherry. Representative Pardo?
I just have one question. It was sort of alluded to in the testimony just ahead of you from here. Would there be a way that your group would be supportive of the requirement that the person must go back to work for the employer that they would have to take his family leave if they choose to go back to work?
Well,
rather than take another job somewhere after this is being held open for 18 weeks or 12 weeks. In good faith, the employer has said, if you go along with this, we'll abide by this, this is great, we want you back, and then that person finds another job or a better opportunity, and then shoots out the door sideways.
Through the chair. Representative Parnell, I guess I can imagine many other circumstances when we're not talking about birth or adoption, particularly where there's been a serious illness in the family, where circumstances actually may not allow the person to return to work, not because they found a bigger and better job during the time that they've been off work unpaid, but because circumstances just might not allow it, and I guess I'd have to ask the Women's Lobby Steering Committee how they feel about that, but my initial reaction would be that it wouldn't be an appropriate requirement.
I'd be interested in hearing what kind of thinking you might have along those lines, because it could be sort of awkward to hold that job open and then find out that that person has decided to go to work for someone else for a different opportunity. Maybe their goals in life have changed over that period of time. They have no vistas, no horizons, things like that. Thank you.
Sherry,
Sherry, though you and I have been through this testimony several times on bonding, it is crucial
several people here on the committee now that have not been through this before. Maybe you can explain what you mean by the word bonding.
Well, the early childhood development experts basically agree that in the very early months of a child's life, there are important things that happen when the child is with one or both of its parents that will very much affect their future development and their potential as a human being. It's during that period of time that the relationship between the child and the parent really is set in concrete. There are very important things about holding your child and just being with your child that is very important, and it's very stressful for women who need to return to work to have a newborn and have to put that newborn out into childcare if they can find and afford childcare for an infant. When they return to work, there's an extra stress on that employee because you're never really comfortable.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry. Next we'll go to Sean O'Hare in Anchorage and then to Terry Quinn in Juneau.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I would also like to speak from the perspective of a small business person. For the last 3.5 years, I've worked for a small Alaska trucking company, 2.5 years of which I've been its vice president. I'm not going to say what I came prepared to say for the simple reason that it's all already been said, a good portion of which was said by the gentleman that just previously spoke from the bank. I would like to say that what he pointed out was true, except that I think his conclusions are going to be considerably different than what I would suggest. We do have a parental leave program at our company, and that is primarily for two reasons. Number one is because we think it's because the president of the company, the former president of the company, thought it was right. He thinks one of the main problems that we have in our American society today is that working parents are not able to properly take care of their children. The other reason is because we have found that it cuts back on turnover. The gentleman from the bank pointed out all the problems and the expenses that come with turnover. One of the main criticisms of American business that I hear all the time anyway is that we constantly think in the short term as compared to thinking in the long term. And I'd like to tell a quick little true story that just happened in a recent year. One of our truck driver's wives got pregnant, and the truck driver's wife worked for a bank. The bank did not allow her parental leave. We allowed our truck driver parental leave. Our truck driver still works for us. That his wife is now part of the 45% turnover problem that the bank has. I'd like to also say that I'm kind of shocked at the amendment that Representative Brown offered, limiting this only to public employees as well as rather than to also including private employees. The problem I see with that is that most private employees already think that employees in the public sector get entirely too many days off at their expense. And whether that be true or not, I don't think it's going to fly among employees in the private sector. They're going to wonder why it is that they don't get that when public employees do. I don't think that's in the interest of private enterprise to exclude the employees of private enterprise from this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sean. Next we've got here in Juneau, Terry Quinn. After that, we'll go to Ruth Lister in Anchorage.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Terry Quinn, and I'm one of those small businessmen that you refer to. And I'm speaking before you on behalf of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And this statement I have is, in general, the Chamber is opposed to the government-mandated employee benefits. Benefits, much like work conditions and wages, are properly left to negotiations between employer and employees. That does not mean the members of the Chamber are insensitive to matters involving a compelling social need or issues critical to the health and safety of workers. However, we do not find either of these conditions present in sufficient degree to warrant adoption of HB 78. In reference to the specific provisions of the bill, we do not find the question of the size of the business impacted the matter of compensation or lack of it or any other conditions and provisions relevant to this central argument. Whether it's 2 employees, 20, or 200 employees is not the question. The issue is one of absence of major and persuasive evidence that normal employee-employer relationships in Alaska are proved to be destructive to family life. While it is apparent that a genuine and serious attempt has been made to draft this bill so it does not create blatantly onerous problems for employers, we would be less than candid if we would not point out the obvious. What is adopted today tends to be amended tomorrow. our members do not believe for a moment that the informal, kind-hearted intervention of the Department of Labor as a mediator in matters of employee leave will not involve overtime into a 10-page regulation. Our members do not believe for a moment that the provisions for leave without pay will not be followed in time with arguments that some employees someplace suffered personal difficulties because of unpaid nature of family leave, and that a change in the law will be deemed necessary. A change will increase direct financial costs to employers. Finally, an absent employee costs a business, regardless of the size of that business. The cost incurred is more than which is encountered in the direct cash payments related to a standard vacation or sick leave. It is an unfilled production function. If the absence of the employee has little or no impact on the operation of the business, then the employer can only conclude that the position is unnecessary in the first place. With perhaps rare exception, there is no such thing as an employee benefit that does not have an associated cost. As I said, I'm a business person in town. I'm a father of five children. I have a father-in-law who has diabetes and has had a stroke. We're dealing with the problem. We've had people in our own business that have taken off time to contribute to go to an AA program. We filled in behind them, much to the consternation of some of our customers wondering why they didn't get deliveries on time. But we lived through it, and when the guy got back to work a month later, he left us and moved to Ketchikan. We live with those things. I thank you much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Ruth Lister in Anchorage, and then in Juneau, Lisa Jarrell.
So this is Ruth Lister, and I'm the director of the Alaska Women's Commission. I sent a letter to Representative Finkelstein, so hopefully that's been distributed. I don't want to go through that testimony again. What I did want to do is note the strong support of the Alaska Women's Commission for House Bill 78. We would support that it apply both to the private and to the public sector. So just wanted to bring your attention to a study we did in Anchorage last year. We ran a survey of businesses, 21 to 35 employees, 36 to 50, 51 to 100, and 100 plus, to ask them questions about family and medical leave. In all of those different size categories, 50 to 59% maternity leave in place, and about 75% had a sick leave policy. Essentially, half, therefore, have a policy in place that's similar to what's being proposed. The only difference is actually between the smaller and the larger businesses, where that the larger businesses had paid maternity leave. To the question about how they rated the policy to their overall for their business, 81% replied that it was positive overall for their business, particularly in areas of higher morale and retention of employees. 19% did not know. From this, I would conclude that the negative impact on business is far less than what might be anticipated. In fact, many businesses are already dealing with this kind of thing in one way or another. It, by making it a right for all workers, we're doing a socially just thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Next, we have Risa here in Juneau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Risa Jarrell, and I represent NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business. We have 5,400 members, which has changed since the last time I was here, from 5,200 members. Our salesmen are out there working pretty hard. We're here to speak in opposition to this legislation. I've previously passed out to the members some letters that people will read into the record. And I think that due to the time constraint we have, I'm not going to have time to do that. I would particularly ask you to take a look at Nancy Burns' letter from Shattuck and Grumman. There are some very definite problems in finding replacement health for insurance people that you have to have a license from the state and this sort of stuff. And she thinks it would be very, very difficult. Ed Van Patten from Alaska Federal Savings and Loan, he says he already has 12 weeks of maternity leave and he can't afford any more. Thank you. And a lady from Larry's Quality Heating, she believes essentially, basically, it should be between the employer and the employee to negotiate that type of benefit package. We're delighted with Representative Brown, the committee substitute of removing small businesses out of the bill, and we want to urge your support of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Next, we've got John Guthrie here in Juneau.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Gugger. I'm at 219 South Franklin Street here in Juneau. I operate a small printing concern, and I'm on the board of directors of the Juneau Chamber and the Alaska State Chamber. I would like to say that while I applaud the intent of this bill, I would be the last to speak out against solid family home and values. I have serious doubt whether this bill will accomplish the legislative intent. How well would state government function, let alone a small business, without its employees at work? Most organizations make allowances for medical leave. If an employee is valuable enough to an organization, then I feel confident the employer will make whatever arrangements are necessary to retain this individual in his employ. I would also like to state that in a state which is driven by state spending as much as ours, why make it more difficult for the independent business person to survive? Even if you do not mandate this for the private sector, but make it available to public sector employees, you will provide another benefit which a small business person can't afford to provide. I'm opposed to this House bill. Thank you for your time today.
Great. Thank you, John. I appreciate your coming. On the teleconference network, I think we've covered the people I've got here signed up. Is there anyone at any of the sites who hasn't spoken who'd like to?
There are no additional testifiers in Anchorage at this time.
Okay, great. Is there, I've got two people down for, who are willing to answer questions from the administration, David Otto and Eileen Plate. Are there any others here who haven't signed up who would like to testify? Okay, come forward, please. If you could just state your name for the record, that would help.
Yes, my name is Don Abel. I'm a local businessman here in town. I'm not going to go into a large prepared text because I don't want to repeat what other people have, but we've been in business in Juneau since 1936. Our family has. We employ right now approximately 28, and we've had as high as 54 employees. And we have, I have a concern that what we're going to wind up doing here is costing the people we're trying to help jobs. We're actually going in reverse. What you wind up doing is you look, you have to be competitive, you have to get your people in there to get the job done because you have to sell your product and do the best service job you can. So what do you say? We want the best people. That's exactly what we want. When a person comes in to hire, I don't care how big a gun the state wants to aim at your head, you still have to survive. And this is what you're talking about. It's just another gun that's pointed at you. So you look at the person and say, now, take a long range look at this person. What is this person going to be able to do for the company, and what, and how is this person going to react? You're going to start tailoring how you hire people by exactly what they may wind up costing you. It's not just costing you, it's wind up costing fellow employees, it's costing the people you're proposing to help. When you take a person out of the productive plan for, what was it, 18 weeks, that's 4.5 months, you bring a temporary in, we can't train them in our business in less than 6 to 10 months. We have over 10,000 SKUs they have to learn, plus unless they're already trained, there's not very many in our line of business. So you look at the person, you say, gee whiz, you know, what can I do here? Can this person perform? And you wind up tailoring and hiring the people. I think that's, I'm going about this wrong. We've managed to work out all leave problems and tailor them to the individual's need. People have to do some planning for their own lives. And they have a certain amount of resources they can deal with. They have money resources, they have time resources. And they need to help work with these. They just can't have an open bag that they can run in. Now, I know that Representative Brown is concerned about the single family, and we have perpetuated that and helped that particular form of family life to the point now where the traditional one we had is no longer the predominance. Whether that's good or bad, that's what we have, and we have to deal with it. But I'm not sure that the state is a good testing ground because the state has no fiscal responsibility. It's hard to really tell just what it does cost the state, the way things are moved around. There's no fiscal responsibility as far as the competitive situation goes within the state. In other words, you have a budget to deal with. You know how much money you're starting out with at the end of the beginning of the year. That's what you deal with. You can't deal with that in private. And my point is that once it becomes through the public law, it's not too long before we say, well, why don't we include everybody? And either you don't hire people at all, or you have the work done somewhere else, or you implode and to stay competitive and stay in business. And I just hate to see people put out of work. I like to see more people work in more jobs, not less, as you impose these bigger and heavier loads to carry. I worry about the other people. I've talked to a number of people who work for me and about this bill, and they thought it was terrible. I've talked to 4 people in the state of Alaska, one a supervisor, 3 just people, all women, that think it's terrible. There's widespread abuse in the state now, they feel. And this is another, can be abused, not that it always will. I think that there is, one time when I was at the University of Alaska, the Board of Regents, I talked about making a leave bank where a certain amount of leave went into a fund for catastrophic illnesses, a fund for situations such as this that people can draw it when they're needed, not just to have anytime they might choose to use it. The other thing that I think is that when you talk about bonding or a meaningful form of life, a family life, one of the things is being facing reality exactly what family life is, and that is working and dividing your time between your family and your work. And I think by putting an artificial amount of leave in there, I think it's an artificial thing that isn't really real. I'm not sure we can really get to where we want to get. We talk about other industrial countries do it. They do it. Sweden, for instance, does it. But the government pays for retirees. And Sweden is having problems. I don't think we need to get to where some of those other countries are at now, England, Sweden. So, anyway, I have a concern there that you need to look very carefully at it. But I do think that there is some avenues that we can need to look at to be able to help people utilize leave for whatever they need it for.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, Don, are you a parent?
Yes, I
am. And did you and your wife take off 4 months to bond with each of your children?
No, we raised, both of us worked most of the time. We raised two children, and our children turned out quite well, I think.
Are your children now having children?
Yes.
Are they taking off periods of time from their jobs so as to accomplish this bonding?
Well, my daughter has three, and no, she's doing quite well with her family. My sister has four, and she holds a very high responsible position, a right of potatoes, and she's doing quite well. And I have another brother that has three, and my mother and dad worked, and there was raised five of us, and both of them worked up until I was 14 or 15 before my mother took her.
The reason I'm asking, I'm so curious about this, is I know personally, my father was there for a short period of time, about a week or so after I was born. Then he went to the Southern Pacific to fight World War II and didn't make it back, except for one brief leave, which resulted in my sister coming around. And at that point in time, he never even had a chance to see her until she was about 6 months old. And I look back over my own life and the two children I raised, and how much bonding capacity and time I had, and in fact, my wife and I decided she wanted to stay home. We were fortunate. She was able to do that.
Well, I didn't tell my daughter.
I thought that was a rare situation, maybe, talking to my friends. If I were to ask the question around the room, how many people in here took off a period of 4 months to spend with their children, or a substantial period, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 3 months, whatever, to spend with their children? And if this is such a valuable thing, then it ought to be something that all of us are doing that could have possibly have afforded to do it. If it isn't such a valuable thing, then maybe Sam was right last year to stick around instead of go home and bond.
I don't know. My daughter was born. I saw her once in 6 months, but that was Vietnam time. And I was
that's my point.
Army. But anyway.
Thank you, Don. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else here in Juneau who would like to testify? Bob? If you could just state your name for the record.
Okay. Yes, sir. Good afternoon. My name is Robert Jacobson. I'm a small business person here in Juneau, and I want to take advantage of the opportunity to come here and also express my sincere concern for the bill. Wings employs upwards of 85 people in the summertime. We have about 55 to 60 full-time, year-round type people, and we'd definitely be affected by the bill. I'm a recent parent. I have a one-and-a-half-year-old, and I can surely applaud what you're trying to do with the bill, but as previous people have stated, I don't necessarily think this is the way to get there, and it's just putting another burden on a small business in Alaska, and I don't think it's something that we need to continue to do, especially for those of us here in Juneau trying to find decent employees and keep them competing with state payrolls and benefits, and it's just going to be very difficult, and I won't go beyond that.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Anyone else in Juneau wants to testify? Any questions that any committee members want to ask of the representatives from Department of Labor or the Department of Administration? Okay, being that the case, we'll end the, seeing we've got no one else to testify, we'll end the public hearing. I'd encourage any of the committee members who've got concerns on this bill to bring them to Representative Brown. Anyone want to take an action at this time, or do you want to put it off to Thursday? It's up to the committee members. Okay, well, we'll, it's up to you. There's a committee substitute before. Does anyone want to offer the committee substitute for adoption to get that block? Okay, is there the committee substitute offered by Representative Brown has been moved. Is there any objection to accepting that committee substitute?
Objection.
Okay, all in favor of the committee substitute, raise their hand. There's voting three, Representative Ivan, Representative Bruckman, Representative Finkelstein, all opposed to the committee substitute, Representative Taylor, Representative Zawacki. I'd encourage members to, who have any concerns on this bill, we've had a great amount of testimony today, to bring it to either Representative Brown or to Cliff Grove, my staff. We'll bring it before us again on Thursday. Is that acceptable?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned.